John chapter 18. Last week we finished up looking at the capture of Christ. We're looking at his crucifixion and the events that lead up to his crucifixion. And last week we looked at his capture. Today we're going to look at the ridiculous mock trial that condemned Jesus to death. Jesus faced two different enemies in trial. First, it was the Jews, and then the Jews delivered him to the Gentiles, to the Romans, to be crucified. One of the things about the Bible that we need to remember is how intricate it is. If the Jews had had the right to condemn Jesus and put him to death, what was the Jewish manner of capital punishment? Now think about it. If the Jews had the legal right to put Jesus to death, they're the ones we're going to look at this morning. Jesus appeared first before Annas the night before the crucifixion. After Annas, they led him to Caiaphas. From Caiaphas, first thing in the morning, the Passover morning, they led him to the council, the Sanhedrin. And the Jews unanimously pronounced Jesus guilty of death. But they didn't have the ability, the legal right to put him to death. Had they had that right, it had been in the hands of the Jews, how would Jesus have been killed? He would have been stoned. The Jewish form of capital punishment was by stoning Stephen in Acts chapter 7. But all the prophecies in the Old Testament said he was going to die on a tree. And so again, we see the Bible doing things that we had no clue were going on that the Jews didn't even understand. It was not in their hands to crucify him. He had to be delivered to the Romans, and God worked the political situation out that he was delivered to Romans, whose manner of capital punishment was crucifixion, dying on a tree. So again, it goes back to show how the Bible predicted everything in ways that man could have never fathomed. There is no way some Old Testament writer dreamed of the future and saw the Jews delivering him into the hand of Gentiles to be crucified when the Jewish manner in the Old Testament and the New Testament was death by stoning. So even that one little thing, if we can call it little, that one little thing shows that God is the author of Scripture. And so we're going to begin this morning by looking at the three parts of Jesus appearing before the Jews. There were two different parts before Annas and Caiaphas, the night before the crucifixion. And then that morning, of course, he was brought before the council who then led him off to Pontius Pilate, which is where we'll end up. And then next week we'll pick up with the Roman half of the trial. So this morning we're going to be looking at the Jewish half. We're going to call it the council. Last week was the capture. This time it's the council. Now, some consider this as one big long trial. From the night before, running into the next morning, the Jews all in a frenzy and trying to get... But as we look closely, we're going to see there are three distinct different parts. Again, first he's led before Annas, then he's led before Caiaphas, then he's brought before the council the next morning. So we're going to begin in John chapter 18 because John is the only one of the gospel writers that mentions this. We're going to call it letter A, the preliminary trial. All right, we might in our day call it the hearing. This is the preliminary trial. You realize when Jesus was captured, when he was turned over by Judas Iscariot, they had no charges against him. They had nothing to take him. They had no grounds, no justification. So now that they've got him in their hands and they know the sentence, they already know what they want to do, we're going to kill him, they've got to fabricate something. They've got to find something to make him guilty of death. This was a farce from the very beginning. You and I know that Jesus was without sin. There was nothing they could accuse him of that was going to make him guilty of death. So we're looking at the preliminary trial. It begins with Jesus being brought in before the former high priest. Notice in John chapter 18 and verse 13. Here's what it says. In verse 13, "And led him away to Annas first." All right, that first. There's where we find out that this is the first trial or first phase of the appearance of Jesus on the night before his crucifixion. They led him to Annas first. Now, who is Annas? And we have to go into history a little bit to get this. Annas was the former high priest of Israel. But when Rome took over, they didn't want an old Jewish priest that was decisively patriotic toward the Jewish nation. And so what happened to Annas is when Rome took over, they put him aside and they appointed actually his son-in-law, Caiaphas, to be the high priest. Because Rome could work with the younger guy a lot better than he could the old guy. It's kind of just like anything in politics. Older folks are usually stubborn and stuck in their ways, and you're not gonna move them or convince them. And so they go after the younger generation. Did you see that they're trying to pass laws to lower the voting age to 16? Now, who in their right mind, who in their right sanity would put it down to 16 years old? 18 is too low. I didn't say that when I was 18, but I say that now. But what's the whole thing? Because the younger they are, the more dreamy they are, and the less practical, and less reality, and less that they understand things, and so they're going to vote a certain direction most of the time at that age. But here, they deposed Annas and put Caiaphas in his place because it suited their political needs, Rome did. But Annas was still looked at by the Jewish people as the high priest. Rome might have made Caiaphas the high priest, and he had the legal authority now, but Annas was the one all the Jews looked to. And so when they first took Jesus captive, the first thing they did is they took him to Annas. Notice, number one, the account. The account. As we said already in verse 13, and led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. All right, again, Caiaphas is going to be the high priest, but Annas is the one that the Jews recognized. We read about Simon Peter's betrayal beginning in verse number 15, and so we're not going to go that, but jump down to verse 19. And again, we're looking at the account. The high priest then, and again, we believe this high priest is talking about Annas the high priest, not Caiaphas the substitute. The high priest Annas then asked Jesus of his disciples and doctrine. Jesus answered, I spake openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogues and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort, and in secret have I said nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me, what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest so? Jesus answered him, If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? Now Annas... All right, so we begin and end with Annas in this account of John, an account that none of the other gospel writers give. Matthew, Mark, and Luke did not give this account. John's the only one. So again, you take the gospel accounts and put them all together, and you get one completed picture. There's no contradictions between them. There's apparent contradictions. Sometimes people say, well, this doesn't agree with that. But just a little bit of study, a little bit of research clears all those contradictions up. So John gives us information the others didn't. He gives us this full account where he was taken away to Annas first. All right? Why was he taken there? Because they need someone with some old-fashioned common sense and old-fashioned wisdom, at least humanly speaking, to figure out what they're going to charge him with. Again, they've got nothing to charge Jesus with. They have taken him at night. They've led him by a band of soldiers, gone out to the garden and brought him captive, and they still have nothing to charge him with. And so they bring him to Annas, thinking, surely Annas, the high priest of our temple and knowing our laws and our codes and our creeds and the law of Moses, surely he can come up with something we can charge this man with. So we find then number two in the preliminary trial, the asking. The asking, and we read that down in verse number 19. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. He asked him, you know what that is? That's called a fishing expedition. He asked him about his disciples and his doctrine. In other words, he doesn't know what to charge him with either. So they're going to start asking him questions, hoping he'll betray himself, and they can find something to accuse him of. That's how ridiculous this whole thing is. And notice it says they asked him of his disciples and his doctrine. They didn't ask him about his doctrine first. They asked him about his disciples first. You know why? Well, the Bible tells us that the chief priests delivered him up because of envy. They wanted to know, why are all these people following you? They were looking at the man before they looked at the message. They were looking at the disciples before they were concerned about the doctrine. And you know that's the way man is. Hey, those of you, if you invite somebody to Bible Baptist Church, you know what they'll say? Well, how big is your church? How many people go there? What kind of programs do you have? What do you do? It's all man. You know what they don't usually say? How's the Bible preaching? How's the teaching of the Bible? They look at the disciples, then they look at the doctrine. They look at man, then they look at the message. That's just the way of life. That's the way people are. And so they asked him first about his disciples, and then now the thing you and I need to remember is we are being looked at. When you and I go about this place and about this town, about among your families, your friends, your fellow workers, and they know you go to Bible Baptist Church, I guarantee you, you are being watched. You're being scrutinized more than you'll ever think, more than you'll ever know, because the things they are going to say, they're not going to say to our face, they're going to say behind our back to one another. And we go on thinking, well, see, everybody thinks everything's fine, but no, they know a lot more than you and I think they know. They know what our life is like. They know what our testimony is. They know if our walk matches our word. Jesus said to the believers at Corinth in 2 Corinthians 3:2, ye are our epistle, known and written of all men. All right, Jesus said to those believers at Corinth, remember how rotten they were? Ye are our epistle, written and known of all men. People are going to know about this church by what they know about its members. People are going to know about the Lord by what they know about his disciples. And they're more interested in that than they are the doctrine. We can talk till we're blue in the face. If the life doesn't match up and measure up, it's not going to accomplish anything. So even though this question was a backhanded and offhanded question by Annas, at the same time we find out that's how man looks at things. That's how he judges things. So it's got to keep us on our toes. Somebody said they look at the crowd instead of the creed. Now, I'm not big on the word creed, but you understand what they're saying. They're looking at the people that are there before they're looking at the message that's delivered. So we find the account, we find the asking, then number three in the preliminary trial, we find the answering, verse number 20. Jesus answered him. Now, it's interesting to note when Jesus answered him, he said, I spoke openly to the world. I ever taught... You know what he doesn't say anything about? He doesn't say anything about his disciples. That's the first thing they asked him, but he ignored that. It's not about his disciples. It's not about man. It's about the message that he came to bring. Human beings want to put the emphasis in the wrong place. Even in Christianity, we want to put our eyes in the wrong place. It's the message. It's the message of the gospel. It's not the messenger. It's the message. And so we find his answer. He did not say anything about his disciples. He didn't say anything about the men. He simply focused on the message. And he said in verse number 20, he said, in secret I have said nothing. You know, if somebody wants to know what Christianity is, it's easy to find. It's not hard. It's not difficult. There's nothing secret about it. You know, you've got the Masons and their secret codes and secret symbols and secret things like that. You've got some of the other large denominations that have little secret things, how they do this and how they do that. But when it comes to the principles of Christ, there's nothing secret. Everything's open. It's been recorded for thousands of years, and there's nothing to hide in there. And Jesus came openly to the world and they rejected him. He said, you want to know what I believe? Ask the people that have heard me. Ask all these. You know what? They didn't, and here's the thing. They never asked the other witnesses. We're going to see in a minute. They found some false witnesses. They found some witnesses against him. But if they wanted witnesses for him, don't you know they could have found them? They were not just his disciples, but there's the 5,000 that he fed, the 3,000 that he fed. The people that he healed, the relatives of the people that he healed that saw that, if they wanted witnesses, they could have got them, but they weren't looking for witnesses for him. They were looking for witnesses against him. That's the conniving. All right? So we see the answering. Number four, the abuse. In verse number 22, and when they had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand. Doesn't that kind of like give you goosebumps? Doesn't that just kind of stop you in your tracks to think that one day in history there was a man standing by God in the flesh and had the audacity and the nerve to reach out and slap him with an open palm? That fellow today is in hell, barring his conversion, which that'd be great if he repented of that. That would be good. I mean, you say, well, he couldn't have. Well, Paul repented of killing God's people. So this guy could have gotten saved after that. The Bible doesn't record it, but if he didn't, can you just imagine him in hell walking around looking at that hand? I touched him. John wrote in 1 John, he said, we have touched and handled, but this guy touched him, but not in the right way. He's down there alongside Pilate, who's probably still wringing his hands and washing his hands and saying, I'm innocent of this blood. No, you're not. Here's a man that struck him, an unarmed prisoner in custody, and he reached out and slapped him across the face. A man that had no sin, a man that had never done anything. One of the officers struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, just reached out and hit him. So verse number 24 says, now Annas then sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest. So we find, first of all, the preliminary trial. That night Jesus is brought from the Garden of Gethsemane. He's brought to Annas, not the acting high priest, but the actual high priest. And he's brought before him, and Annas, by the time he leaves, Annas has nothing to accuse him of. He asked him about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus said, everybody's heard what I've taught, and there's nothing more he can get out of him, so he sends him away. Go over, if you would, then to Matthew chapter 26. And in Matthew chapter 26, then we find the second phase of the trial, this mock trial, the night before Jesus' crucifixion. From the Garden of Gethsemane to the house of the high priest Annas. Annas and Caiaphas, son-in-law, lived in the same place. And then after Annas can't find anything, he has him brought over to Caiaphas in Matthew chapter 26, down in verse number 59. This again gives us that second account. Now the chief priests in verse 59, now the chief priests and elders and the council sought fault witness against Jesus, but found none. Yea, though they they found none. Verse 16. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. The last came two false witnesses and said, "I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days." And the high priest arose and said unto him, "Answerest thou nothing?" This we've got Matthew, Mark, and Luke all giving us this information, and this is Caiaphas. Now that Jesus is appearing before, after he's been to Annas, they bring him. Those that captured him in Gethsemane now bring him over to Caiaphas looking for something they can accuse Jesus of. Notice number one in this principal trial, if I don't know if I gave you that word, letter B, the principal trial. Here again is one where they're going to fabricate something to lay to Jesus' charge. And so we find the principal trial. Number one, the conspiracy. We read about that in verse number 59. Now the chief priests and the elders and all the council sought false witnesses against Jesus, or sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death. So we find from the very beginning they're looking for false witnesses. This whole trial is going to be built on falsehood. Kind of like trials in our day anymore. Not after the truth. And the whole trial of Jesus is not going to be built on falsehood. It's going to be built on a lie. They've already decided they want to kill him. Now they just got to come up with a reason. It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be accurate. It just has to be a reason. And they bring the false witness, as it says at the end of verse number 59. And yet verse 60 says, but they found none. But found none. They had witnesses, but their witness didn't agree with each other. They came and laid some charges against him, but nothing, the common sense of the men that were there could realize that nothing wasn't going to stick. They have to have something to bring before Pontius Pilate that's going to stick to him. And though they had false witnesses rising up and accusing them of different things, it says twice, once in verse 60, but they found none. And then, yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. It tells us twice. There was nothing that they could find to accuse Jesus of. No matter how strong the conspiracy was, they couldn't find anything. Then look down at verse 60. At the last came the two false witnesses, and they said in verse 61, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days. Now you know that story, don't you? It's from John chapter 2. Jesus was led to the temple of Solomon. And the Jews were bragging about that temple and how glorious and magnificent it was. And Jesus said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I'll raise it up. Well, the natural man that perceiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, the natural man said, he's talking about that temple. Now, first of all, he said, tear it down and I'll build it back up. Now they're just giving half the story. They're saying he is able to destroy it and build it in 3 days. He's promising he can build it back up. But they're just looking at the promise that he said they're going to destroy the temple, and the high priest is going to rend his clothes and say, what need we have any further witness? They're going to jump on something that's misinterpreted and misunderstood, but it fits their goal and fits their purpose. A lot of folks are like that with the church. They misunderstand, they misinterpret, they don't get it all, but boy, it's an accusation they can lay on the church. It gives them excuse to walk away. Gives them justification to quit on God, to just stop serving Him. Oh, well, the church did me wrong, or the people did me wrong. Well, just get used to it. Just suck it up, brother, because that's the way. You can't live in this world anywhere without somebody doing you wrong somewhere down the line. At least among the people of God, it's limited, and when it happens, most of the time, people are sorry and ask for forgiveness. You don't get that out in the rest of the world. So they're looking at Jesus and looking for something they can accuse him of, something they could get together, but their witnesses could not agree together. Notice number two in the principal trial. Not only number one, the conspiracy, but number two, the confronting. The confronting. In verse 62, when Caiaphas hears that, he says, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. You know, sometimes silence is golden. Sometimes the best answer is no answer. When it comes to the Lord, when you're being set up, you know, you're in a group of three or four different guys or different people, and they're getting ready to try to lay the trap, sometimes the best thing to do is just say nothing. Jesus wasn't going to give them the ammunition. He wasn't going to load their gun for them to shoot back at him and make an accusation. So the Bible said Jesus held his peace. That's the thing we have trouble with sometimes, is holding our peace. We always want to speak. We always want to say something. We always want to give a piece of our mind. Jesus was wise. When he knew this deck was stacked against him, he just held his peace, didn't answer anything. That made the high priest a little more angry in verse 63. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God. Boy, now he's going all out. I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. That's the confronting in verse number 63. Tell us whether thou be the Son of God. They're trying to provoke him. They're trying to get an answer. They're trying to find out, and what does Jesus say in verse 64? Thou hast said. You know what it says in Mark chapter 14 when he asked him that question? He said, I am. Art thou the Son of the living God? I am. You know that name. You recognize that title. He used it in the Gospel of John over and over again. Art thou the Son of the living God? He simply said, thou hast said. There are those that say that Jesus never claimed to be God in the flesh. You're not reading. You're not paying attention. Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am. And they took up stones to stone him. He said, why do you stone me? For what good work do you stone me? Not for any good work, but because thou, being a man, makest thyself God. Make no mistake about it. Jesus claimed to be God. Thomas in John chapter 20 fell down in front of him when he hadn't been there. that night in the upper room when Jesus showed himself alive by many infallible proofs. Thomas wasn't there, and he said, except I see the print in the side and put my finger forth and thrust it in, I'll not believe. And Jesus appears to Thomas the next time. He said, Thomas, be not faithless, but believing. Thomas falls down in front of him and says to Jesus, my Lord and my God. You know that verse is even in the Jehovah Witness Bible? Even they couldn't get rid of that one. That's the place to take them. They fell down in front of Jesus. Now the Jehovah Witness say, well, he wasn't God. He was a God, but he wasn't God. That's not what it says. It's got a capital G in there. And if he was anything other than God, capital G, then he's nothing but a fake and a phony and a charlatan and a deceiver, because he allowed somebody fall down in front of him and say, my Lord and my God, and he didn't correct him. Paul did. Peter did. Daniel did. And if Jesus was a good man, he wouldn't have let that happen. But you know what? He was God. He did claim to be God. And so those modernists and those that say, well, he never claimed to be deity, never claimed to be God. You're not reading. You're not paying attention. Art thou the Christ, the Son of God? Thou hast said, I am. The confronting. Then notice number three, the conclusion. The conclusion. In verse 65, then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. What further need we have we of witnesses? Behold now, ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? Verse 66. In Matthew 26, verse 66. Have fun anyways. What think ye? They answered and said, he is guilty of death. He's guilty of death. Now you know the problem is that's not going to hold up in Roman law. That might hold up in Jewish law, making yourself God. But Jewish law, as we said already, is death by stoning. But the prophecy didn't say he's going to die by stoning. So they've got to take him before Pilate with a crime that's guilty of death by their law, but not by Roman law. Romans don't care who claimed to be a god. They all claim to be gods. Caesar was a god. They are all kinds of gods. That doesn't mean anything in their law system. But the Jews were convinced he's got to die. Then notice number four in the principal trial, the cruelty. And it just continues on from where we were before in verse 67. Then did they spit in his face. You know, there's nothing more offensive. Can I say nothing more gross? Nothing more ill-received, nothing more disrespectful than spitting in someone's face. Remember years ago, Roberto Alomar, the baseball player, spit in that umpire's face. Boy, they were ready to do him in. That's the epitome of disrespect. That's what they did to Jesus Christ. They spit in his face. Hard to believe. And buffeted him. That's a closed hand. And others smote him with the palms of their hands. So they spit on him. They smote him. They were sarcastic. They said in verse 68, prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is it that smote thee? They're mocking him. The cruelty of man. You know what it did? Again, folks, it fulfilled ancient prophecy. Lamentations, the book of Lamentations chapter 3 and verse number 30 said, he gave his cheek to them that smiteth him. Same word, they smote him. He giveth his cheek to them that smite him. And Isaiah 50, verse 6, Micah chapter 5, verse number 1, both of these prophecies are repeated again. Three times in the Old Testament it's recorded, they would smite him, they would slap him, they would buffet him. And when they did that, they thought they were doing it of their own volition, but God knew. He'd already said it was going to happen. It had been prophesied. So we find the preliminary trial, the principal trial, then letter C, the public trial. The public trial. And that picks up in the next verse in Matthew chapter 27, verse 1. We're going to look in Luke in just a moment. But in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 1, then following that thing, it says, when the morning was come. So all these things that have already happened, happened at nighttime. While everybody else was asleep, in the darkness, these dastardly deeds had been done. In the off hours, under the cover of darkness, under secrecy. And now that they've got their charge, now that they've got their claim, now it's got to become a public thing. It can't just be this small group of men. It's got to be public. So in Matthew chapter 27 and verse 1, it says, when the morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Now that he's appeared before Annas, now that he's appeared before Caiaphas, now that they have a charge about a blasphemy and making himself God, now they're going to bring it out to the whole council, to the 71, the Sanhedrin as they were called. And they bring him before all the people. Notice number one, the purpose. The purpose of the public trial, and we've read it in Matthew 27, verse 1, they took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. Try to imagine in your mind the frenzy that's taking place. During the night, he had appeared before Annas and Caiaphas. Then he's being hauled before this council of the 71 men now. And there's no room for common sense at this point. There's no backing up. There's no taking a breath. There's no time out. They have already determined what they're going to do. We are going to put him to death. And it doesn't matter how they do it. Doesn't matter what they got to charge him with. They are determined they're going to do this. Number two, the period. We talk about this already. We'll go over to Luke chapter 22. In Luke chapter 22 and verse number 66, then we find this third phase of this trial. In Luke 22 and verse 66, did I say that before? Okay. In verse 66, and as soon as it was day, as soon as it was day, Mark says in Mark chapter 15 and verse 1, straightway in the morning. All of this had been connived. All this had been accomplished during the nighttime, during the darkness. And now it's day. You know what day this is? The night before, he's been betrayed, been delivered. They've spent all night, these men have spent all night trying to find out how to kill him. Why? A good reason to kill him. Now, the next morning, what day is this? It's the Passover. What were Jewish people doing the night before the Passover? Read the Old Testament. They were preparing. They were getting ready. The sacrifice of the lamb. The feast of unleavened bread. The Passover. They were focused on worshiping God. They were focused on the sacrifice made. They were focused on preparation. You know what these men did? They had nothing to do with the preparation for the Passover. They weren't interested in the lamb. Now, they didn't know what they were doing. We understand it, but they weren't looking at this being the day of Moses' law to have the Passover and to kill the lamb. It was not a day of celebration of God's deliverance from them out of Egypt in the Old Testament. This was a day to put Christ to death. The spiritual didn't matter. The real reason for the day, they weren't interested in. They had connived all night long to come to this conclusion, and they were determined now, it's day, they're going to put him to death. Number three, the passion. And we see that, and we've talked about that already. In verse number 66 of Luke 22, again it says, and as soon as. They didn't wait for high noon. They didn't wait for the hour where everybody was up and moving about. As soon as it was day, they were determined they were going to get this thing done. All the things that are planned in darkness. I don't know about you. You know me. I like cold weather. I'm a fan of cold weather. But I'm not a fan of being dark at 5 o'clock in the evening. There's just something not natural about that. Darkness is supposed to be at nighttime, not at 5 o'clock in the evening. But whether it gets dark at 5 o'clock in the winter or it gets dark at 9 or 9:30, sometimes at the height of summer, when darkness comes, that's when all the bad things start to happen. You read the police reports in the local paper. Yeah, some things happen during the daytime, but the majority of those things have to happen after the sun goes down. Here's some religious leaders, religious men. You know what they did? They spent the night before the Passover, they spent the night conniving on how they're going to do evil to the Son of God. That's their passion. The zeal of the wicked. Don't you wish that we as believers could match the zeal of unbelievers? The enthusiasm they show for a football game. 20 degrees outside, shirtless men with their colors painted all over the thing. Now, I'm not recommending you and I do that, but why can't we do things for the Lord that are even remotely as zealous as that? Number four, we need to move on quickly. The probing. The probing in verse 67. Art thou the Christ? Again in verse number 70, they said all, art thou then the Son of God? Jesus was the Son of God. Jesus was the Christ. He accepted that title. He accepted that name. Pilate put up over him, this was the Son of God. This was the King of the Jews. Oh no, put that he said he was. Pilate said, what I've written, I've written. Pilate knew. Pilate had heard it. The probing. Then number five, the product. The product. Here in Luke chapter 22 and verse 71, then said they, what need have we of any further witness? We have heard of ourselves, we ourselves have heard of his own mouth. What need we of any further witness? They stopped him. Small letter A, they stopped him. Same thing Caiaphas has said. We don't need any more witnesses. Why? We've got his claim that he's the Son of God. Well, wait a minute. How about all the people he healed that believe it? How about all the people he taught the Sermon on the Mount that believe it? No, we don't want to hear from them. We want to hear from the ones that are against him. This was a stacked deck all the way. There was no justice being done anywhere about it. They stopped him. Letter B. They secured him. Matthew chapter 27 and verse 2 says, and when they had bound him, they secured him. When they had bound him. He's already bruised. He's already been beaten. He's already bleeding. And then they bind him. It wasn't their bounds that held him. You think Samson was something when he could snap the dry reeds and cords? When the Philistines came upon him and Delilah said, Samson, the Philistines are upon thee. You think that those bounds could have held Jesus, the one that spoke the world into existence? It wasn't those bounds that bound him. It was the will of God. Letter C, they sent him. Letter C, they sent him. Then they led him away and delivered him to Pontius Pilate, Matthew chapter 27. They led him away and delivered him to Pontius. Can you see him? He's tied, he's bleeding, and he's being led off. You know what Isaiah called it in Isaiah 53:7? As a lamb is led to the slaughter. That's what this whole picture is. That's what the whole thing is that's going on here. And we look back at that and we think, how in the world? Why in the world? These men thought they were great heroes for the Jewish faith. And they became the greatest fools in all of history. His blood be upon us and our children, the Jews said. His blood be upon us and our children. And what has the Jewish people and Jewish nation suffered since that time? And yet Jesus went bound as a lamb to the slaughter for your sins and mine. The council. Next week we'll go on to the second part, and that is the trial, not before the Jews, but before the Romans. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Father, again, thank you for your word. How rich and full it is. How instructional. God, how amazing. And yet at the same time, Father, how real. God, no one can honestly, no one can intelligently doubt the word of God. Every jot and tittle, every T has been crossed, every I has been dotted. Everything falls into perfect place. God, those things that you said would happen, those things that you say are going on now, and the things you predict will happen, all are going to come to pass because it's recorded in your word. Father, help us to take it to heart. Bless us this morning. Bless those that come to join us for our morning service. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, take a few minutes and then we'll begin our morning service.